Welcome to the deep dive. If your work involves trying to understand people, maybe you're analyzing customer satisfaction, marketing feedback, employee engagement, or even happiness scores, then you are, well, constantly dealing with data that looks simple but really hides profound complexity.
Yeah, we're talking about rating scales.
Exactly. We are talking about ordinal data. Those 1 to 5 or 1 to 7 scales, you know, the ubiquitous Likert scale.
They're everywhere. Absolutely. The lifeblood of fields like sociology, psychology, market research, you name it.
But there's a catch, right? The problem is that for decades, conventional statistical models, like your standard linear regression, have treated those numerical categories as if the distance between a 2 and a 3 is the exact same psychological jump as between a 4 and a 5.
Which it often isn't. It completely ignores the sort of human reality of the situation.
Yeah, my decision to rate something a 4 isn't necessarily coming from the same place as someone else's decision to rate it a 5. And that brings us to the fundamental issue that these CUB models were really invented to solve.
Precisely. Think about it. If I rate a product a 5 because I genuinely had an excellent experience, okay, that's a clear signal of strong preference.
Right.
But what if I rated a 5 just because I was confused by the survey, or I was in a rush, or I just defaulted to a high score out of, you know, indifference?
Ah, I see. So that 5 is basically noise in the second case.
Exactly. But conventional models, they treat both inputs exactly the same. CUB models, however, are specifically designed to try and untangle that mess.
Okay, so let's unpack this with the source material we have today. We've been diving into a pretty comprehensive bibliometric study. It's like a map, really, that analyzed 113 publications on CUB models indexed between 1999 and early 2025.
Yeah, a solid overview.
And our mission today is to shortcut you, the listener, straight to the core of this methodology and show you where it's being applied right now.
So the CUB model stands for combination of uniform and shifted binomial, is what we call a mixture model. And the key thing is, it doesn't just measure the answer.
Yeah.
It actually models the process of answering.
Okay, that's the crucial insight.
Definitely.
And here's the aha mechanism, as you put it. CUB explicitly models a response as being driven by 2 separate, though interacting, latent variables. Hidden variables, basically.
Right. The first component, which we model using something called the shifted binomial distribution, captures the conscious choice. This is what we call the feeling or preference.
So the strength of their actual opinion. Did they genuinely love the service, or were they really disappointed?
Exactly. And then the second component, this is kind of the magic sauce, is modeled by a discrete uniform distribution. This captures the uncertainty or indecision.
Uncertainty. Okay.
Yeah, this is the part that reflects randomness, maybe ambivalence, or just the pure statistical chance that someone clicked a category without a strong underlying conviction.
So if you're analyzing a rating scale using CUB, you don't just get an average score. You get these 2 critical quantifiable metrics, the intensity of their actual opinion and how sure they were when they gave it.
Right. And this capacity to explicitly quantify indecisiveness, treating it as actual information, not just noise to be ignored. That's why CUB models generally provide a much more robust and interpretable fit than, say, older methods.
That immediately changes the game for any analyst, doesn't it? Because you move from asking, what did people say, to asking, okay, but what did people mean?
Precisely.
Let's jump into how these ideas are being used in the real world. That's our first segment, CUB in practice.
Okay. Well, CUB models tend to pop up anywhere subjective judgment is being assessed. Ratings, preferences, opinions.
What's this?
And right back to the foundational applications, we see Delia and Piccolo using CUB models way back in 2005. They were analyzing customer preferences for food quality. So immediately translating the statistical framework into, you know, actionable marketing insights.
And if we look at the high impact research, the review highlights, the applications get very specific. Take that study by Corduas and colleagues from 2013, apparently one of the most cited articles. They used CUB models to analyze Italian consumers' perceptions of wine, specifically the importance of wine attributes for purchase decisions.
Ah, yes. That's a perfect example of CUB's power. They weren't just measuring overall liking, like, do you like this wine? Yes, no.
Right.
They were quantifying how certain consumers were about the importance of specific attributes. Like, is the label, the brand, the region, or maybe the price most important for their purchase decision? And crucially, How certain are they about that priority list?
So the company gets really targeted information.
Exactly. They learn what drives definite choice versus what just generates confusion or indifference.
That's immediately relevant. You know, if I run a company and my data shows customers have a strong preference for my brand, but there's high uncertainty about the label, well, I know exactly where to allocate my design budget.
Yep. But CUB models aren't just limited to consumer goods.
No.
Far from it. They've proven incredibly valuable in social science, especially when measuring something as abstract as, say, job satisfaction or happiness.
Ah.
The source highlights work by Gambacorta and Ionario in 2013. They applied CUB models to the Bank of Italy's big survey on household income and wealth, analyzing responses on a 10-point scale for things like life satisfaction.
Okay, this is the finding that really needs a closer look, because the number cited is genuinely shocking. What did CUB actually reveal when applied to those subjective happiness goals, especially compared to conventional models like cumulative logit models?
Well, they discovered a really high degree of uncertainty in the responses, something like 46%.
46%?
Yeah. Now, for listeners maybe less familiar, a cumulative logit model is one of the standard ways to handle ordinal data. It tries to predict the probability of falling into a certain satisfaction category or higher.
Okay. So when you say 46% uncertainty, does that mean that nearly half of the responses, maybe scores of 5, 6, 7, or 8 on that 10-point scale, were potentially just random clicks or pure ambivalence rather than reflecting a strong, directed feeling?
In short, yes. That's a reasonable interpretation.
But
it means that almost half the data points the traditional analysis would treat as meaningful input, as indicators of real directed satisfaction or dissatisfaction, were actually heavily influenced by indecision or just noise.
Okay, but wait, that's staggering. If organizations are basing strategic decisions like HR policy or product development on average satisfaction scores where almost half the input might be statistical noise, I mean, how wildly off target could those strategies be?
It's a major concern.
That 46% could be the difference between thinking a new initiative is a success and realizing your target audience is largely indifferent or confused.
That's precisely the practical implication. And because the CUB model explicitly accounted for that 46% uncertainty, it actually yielded stronger, cleaner, and ultimately more interpretable effect estimates.
How so?
It showed how different demographic factors, like marital status or income, affected the feeling component differently than they affected the uncertainty component. Traditional methods just lump that uncertainty and preference together, potentially masking the true drivers of opinion.
It sounds like CUB brings a much-needed layer of psychological validity to the analysis, then?
I think that's fair to say.
And the applications are moving beyond just static snapshots, too, right? The source notes that dynamic CUB models are now being used, like, for analyzing Italian consumers' inflation perceptions and expectations over time.
That's the next step in complexity, yeah. Dynamic CUB allows researchers to see how that latent feeling component, the true underlying opinion, actually evolves over days or months.
Interesting.
It shows CUB isn't just for a one-off survey. It can potentially track the trajectory of complex behavioral dynamics, which could make it invaluable for tracking things like macroeconomic indicators or public opinion shifts.
Okay, so we've seen what CUB models can achieve in the field, analyzing everything from wine preferences to wealth dynamics. Now let's turn our attention to who is driving this research movement and where the knowledge is being created.
Right. So despite the rapid and actually quite interdisciplinary application, we see CUB models used in mathematics, sure, but also engineering, business, social sciences, computer science.
A broad spread.
Yeah, but the research engine room, let's call it, remains highly concentrated geographically.
And the map drawn by this bibliometric study is pretty clear. Italy really stands out as the geographical core of CUB model development.
Absolutely. China, Germany, the USA, they contribute too. But the methodology was essentially born and primarily nurtured there in Italy.
That concentration is fascinating.
It is. It reflects how a really dedicated group of methodologists can pioneer and, frankly, dominate a new statistical field for decades.
Does that concentration present any potential blind spots, though? I mean, if the research is so geographically focused, are we potentially missing diverse perspectives or applications, maybe ones that might thrive in, say, Asian or South American markets that rely on different survey styles or have different cultural response habits?
That's a really key question for the future, and a limitation the source itself implicitly acknowledges. But for now, The source confirms that the most influential authors are all connected to that Italian statistical network.
Okay.
We see names like Domenico Piccolo, who proposed the original model back in 2003.
The originator.
And then Maria Iannario, who currently holds the highest total citations, largely for figuring out how to make that initial mathematical idea robust and applicable in the real world.
That makes perfect sense. One person has the spark, the initial inspiration, but it takes collaborators and subsequent methodologists to turn it into a widely applicable, reliable tool.
Exactly. It's a community effort over time.
Now, let's look at the four major thematic clusters the citation analysis identified. These seem to show us the functional goals, the different streams within the research community.
Right. Cluster one is what the city calls the application-driven cluster. You can think of this as the real-world testing ground.
Okay.
Their focus is taking the core theory and applying it directly to things like consumer behavior, like those food industry examples we mentioned, and continually comparing CUB against older, established models like Logit or Probit, often demonstrating CUB's superior fit.
Proving its worth in practice. And cluster two, then, is the methodology-driven group, the engine room you talked about.
That's it. This cluster focuses intensely on the theoretical and statistical refinement. They're the ones trying to enhance CUB's accuracy, handle more complex data scenarios, really pushing the mathematical envelope.
Got it. Then cluster three focuses on extensions.
Yeah, this is where things like hierarchical or nonlinear extensions were introduced, making the model more flexible for different data structures. And crucially, this is the cluster that really tackled explicitly modeling don't know responses.
Ah, interesting. Not just treating them as missing data.
Exactly. Treating the outright refusal to answer not as missing data, but as potentially meaningful information about uncertainty itself. The work by Manasura and Zuccolato from 2014 is highlighted here.
And finally, cluster four shows the continuous evolution and new versions.
Right. This demonstrates how the CUB framework itself is adapting. It's handling heterogeneity within samples, dealing with hesitation, and increasingly treating that uncertainty not as something to be merely controlled for, but as valuable input that might actually define different population segments.
It really highlights that the CUB community isn't static. They're constantly pushing the boundary, refusing to settle, and continually adapting the framework to capture, hopefully, deeper behavioral truth.
That's the impression you get, yes. They're refining and expanding.
Which brings us very neatly to our final segment. The frontiers of CUB models. Because the big challenge now seems to be scaling this precision up, right? Moving from single questions to entire complex surveys.
Exactly. Most real-world questionnaires have multiple items, and often those items are correlated. You know, how you answer question A might influence how you answer question B.
So we need models generalized for multivariate ordinal data.
Precisely.
Yeah.
We need ways to handle that interdependence.
The sources outline some attempts to tackle this. There were earlier methods mentioned, like copula-based approaches from Colombi and Giordano in 2016. But there seem to be newer, maybe cleaner solutions emerging now.
That's right. Copula-based methods, while statistically powerful, often rely on quite complex mathematical linking functions, which can sometimes make interpretation tricky.
Okay.
The newer bivariate CUB models, like one recently proposed by Yipin Wu in 2024, are designed to model two correlated ordinal responses simultaneously, but with a potentially simpler structure.
Why is that simpler structure so important? Could you help our listener understand what identifiability issues means in plain English? Because that sounds like the technical hurdle these newer models are trying to overcome.
Great point. Basically, an identifiability issue means that your mathematical model gets confused. It can't reliably tell if the pattern you see in the data is coming from latent variable A, say the feeling, or latent variable B, the uncertainty.
So the results are ambiguous.
Exactly. The resulting parameter estimates are ambiguous, which is terrible for interpretation. You don't know what's driving what.
Okay.
By separately estimating the association between the uncertainty components and the feeling components of the two responses, these newer bivariate CUB models aim to avoid that ambiguity. They potentially guarantee that the interpretation is simpler and more trustworthy because you have a clearer idea of which component is driving the correlation between the two survey items.
That sounds like a huge win. Simpler, more precise psychological interpretation, even when dealing with greater statistical complexity.
That's the goal.
Now, what about heterogeneity, that challenge of finding different groups within your massive sample who respond differently?
For that, the source points towards tools like Cibermote. That stands for CUB Regression Model Trees.
Okay, model trees.
Yeah, this tool cleverly combines the precise interpretability of CUB models with the flexibility of decision tree methods, like CART or SHE, if people know those.
How does it work, roughly?
It essentially partitions your sample automatically. It says, okay, group A, characterized by these demographics or behaviors, responds this way to a stimulus with this level of feeling and uncertainty. But group B, characterized by these other demographics, responds entirely differently.
So it's identifying hidden, meaningful customer segments or respondent groups that your standard single regression model might just average out and miss entirely.
Precisely. It captures heterogeneity where a single overall model might otherwise fail to represent the underlying reality accurately.
And we can actually see the shift towards complexity reflected in the keywords used in the CUB literature over time, can't we?
We can. Initially, the keywords were very much focused on the basics, CUB models, ordinal data, pretty straightforward statistical term.
Now,
the sources show a clear emergence, a shift toward terms like uncertainty itself, attitudes, and the specific analytical method used for estimation, maximum likelihood.
So that keyword evolution shows the field moving from just proving the foundational math to really tackling these deeper behavioral dimensions.
I think so. And it's also important to note, as the source does, that the keywords defining that first application cluster, things like preferences and attitudes, have a very clear, direct link to the goals of sentiment analysis in modern machine learning.
Ah, interesting connection.
CUB models are essentially providing the rigorous statistical backbone needed for truly understanding why people feel the way they do, which is critical information if you want to train AI systems to understand human sentiment accurately.
Okay, so after mapping this whole landscape, let's try and bring it back to the core takeaway for someone listening.
Yeah, the core strength of CUB models, whether we're talking univariate or the newer multivariate ones, really remains the same. They provide a more complete picture of human judgment. They do this by separating the conscious choice, the preference or feeling, from the randomness or indecision, the uncertainty component.
So if you analyze subjective ratings using CUB,
you gain insight into not just what people say, but how sure they were when they said it. And that extra dimension is often incredibly valuable.
Now, the source we analyzed, this bibliometric review, was incredibly informative, mapping out the field really well. But like any good piece of research, it does acknowledge its own limitations.
Correct. The primary limitation noted is that the study was based exclusively on the Web of Science database.
Which means
some relevant publications, perhaps highly specialized papers or maybe regionally published articles in other databases or languages, might have been missed. That's always a possibility with bibliometrics. Also, the clustering of thematic ideas, deciding which paper fits into which theme, always involves a degree of researcher's subjectivity. These are just standard notes for scholars looking to build on this kind of work.
Fair enough. But the study also highlighted one massive critical gap for future research, a frontier that remains, it seems, wide open.
Yes, and this is perhaps the most significant opportunity identified in the whole review. The critical absence, or at least underdevelopment, of longitudinal CUB models.
Which, if I'm understanding correctly, means we still lack a robust, generally accepted way to model ordinal time series data using the CUB framework.
Exactly. Think about measuring consumer confidence or employee morale on a 5-point scale, but doing it every single week. Those observations are clearly interdependent.
Right. What I rated last week almost certainly influences what I rate this week.
Precisely. My feeling, my uncertainty, they don't reset to zero each time. The existing CUB methodologies, powerful as they are for cross-sectional data, haven't yet been fully developed or widely adopted to capture those complex interdependencies between successive observations really accurately.
Wow, so that means there's a huge future need for methodologies that can track and model the evolution of both a person's feeling and their certainty over time, while accounting for the fact that those opinions are built sequentially, influencing each other.
That's the challenge. Developing robust longitudinal CUB models seems to be the next major hurdle.
So the provocative thought for our listener is this. If you are dealing with any data set involving subjective ratings measured repeatedly over time,
then think about how CUB models could potentially transform your analysis of that dynamic uncertainty, how both feeling and sureness change and interact through time. Well, that's arguably the next statistical revolution waiting to happen in this area. That's the frontier for the ambitious learner or researcher.
Yeah. That's a fascinating note to end on. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the complex, but I think profoundly insightful world of CUV models.
My pleasure.
We'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.